Let's cut to the chase. The world of work is changing. There's no stopping that change. Welcome to the Better Work Project, brought to you by the team at SoftEd. I am your host, David Mantica, and joining me as co-host is Andy Cooper. In this podcast, we will explore the changing world of work, what the future of work means, how it affects businesses and workers alike, and how we can create more productive and engaged workplaces. I hope you join us for the ride. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the Better Work Project. We're back with episode 24. And Andy, we've been left to our own devices today. Where's David? He's abandoned ship on us.
Oh, that's a bit like Where's Wally, isn't it? I'm not sure. Probably somewhere in the world, but we have to see if we can find him hanging over something.
Now, I want to start by asking, we've got a company meeting every week where we start off with an icebreaker question, and the questions just progressively get more ridiculous. So I'm going to start by asking, what's the worst icebreaker question you've had?
I think it's anything that sort of makes you feel squeamish, like who is your best squeeze or something like that, or you know, can you think of a movie to describe your boss, and it might have things like The Exorcist or Mad Max or something like that.
So since David's left us in charge, your icebreaker question is, if you were in charge for a day, what would you do? 4-day work week, ice cream machine in the kitchen, what are you going to do?
I think it would be some form of entertainment. So you heard me sing last week, which was
karaoke machine
for your entertainment. So yeah, it would definitely be a karaoke machine or some form of sing-along comedian, stand-up comedian type thing. That would be it, something like that.
Hopefully we don't have to take turns and we can actually get someone in to do that, right?
No, that would be, you'd be doing it.
I'm not sure it would be that good.
Stand-up comedian, karaoke.
I think I might rather sing.
Something like magician, whatever.
All right. Well, let's start the podcast proper because we've got a fantastic guest joining us. In the podcast today, we're talking transformation. Now, everyone talks about this, but not many businesses really achieve it. This is the story of Seek Asia. It's a story of how three companies became one with a unified purpose, aligned teams, and engaged employees. Now, one of the key players behind this change program is our special guest today, Zi Tang from Future Work Asia, and now also part of the SoftEd team. Welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about Seek Asia and what your role was there?
Sure. So I think to kind of give you the context of how we came to be, probably have to go back about 20 years. So when it started, the late 90s, this was really when the dot-com boom started taking off in Southeast Asia. And this part of the world, there were really two emerging players in the online jobs marketplace. And coincidentally, these two companies, Jobstream and JobCB, started all around the same time as Seek, all within a couple of years. So in Malaysia, there was JobStreet. So JobStreet, founded in Malaysia, late 90s, basically just started as a job board. And a year later, JobCB started. So you know, they had a very similar history to Seek, where they started growing and then getting candidates and then helping people find jobs and things like that. And eventually, they kind of grew all over Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. So combined, these two companies, they were in 7 countries. So they did pretty well for themselves. Now, around 2010 or so, Seek was also being very successful in ANZ and started to take an interest in investing in these two companies. So Seek had originally invested in JobCB and outright acquired them, I think around 2012 or so, but really left it to kind of its own thing. And then a couple of years later, they started taking a look at JobStreet and then finally decided to invest in JobStreet around late 2014, early 2015. And the sale went through around mid-2015, and then finally Seek acquired these two gems in the jobs marketplace in Asia and decided to combine it. So here we have Seek owning these two companies, deciding what to do with it. And the first thing they decided to do was, let's merge it. All right, let's merge these two companies to become Seek Asia and really be a single marketplace that serves this part of the world. So with the acquisition, a lot of the founders and leaders that have been there for some time, they basically took their money and went home. So we were left with this vacuum at the leadership level where all but one exec left the company. So we had the COO of JobStreet became CEO, but basically every other position was open. Now, with that, there was an expectation that whatever new leadership comes in that gets hired, is the goal is to basically create a single unified entity that is aligned to Seek's purpose. So the first person that was hired was the CIO. So that's Daniel Walters. And he came in and said, okay, we got a lot of work to do. We have to merge these two companies. I got to start hiring out my team. So I was hired in, and I think the original pitch of the title was Hit Scrum Master or something like that. So by the time I came in, I realized that the job was a lot bigger than what I thought it would be. And to me, the immediate challenge was, how do we take these two companies that was fiercely competitive, not only to work together, but also to be more agile? And why do we have to be more agile is because they have competitors that didn't have 20 years ago, namely like Indeed, Facebook, Google. So that was the challenge. How do we take these two companies, create a single entity, have them play nice together, and compete against the likes of Indeed, Google, Facebook, and LinkedIn?
So Z, that sounds like a really interesting time to join a company. Andy, have you had a similar experience going through a big change program?
Not so much the merger of three sort of individual companies together.
Not quite of that nature.
But I've worked for companies that used to acquire a lot, like CA, for example, used to acquire dozens of companies every year. And so sort of became quite a process. But I think it was always a little bit different when you were the big company acquiring little ones. It was always hard on the companies being acquired. In fact, sometimes we would actually gain back people that had deliberately left the organization. So that was always interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's quite hard on the companies being acquired. I had a similar situation in my last company. We went through this phase of acquiring a lot of companies, and it's quite challenging because you're adopting a new company culture. Sometimes you're being bought out by an international company, and that has its challenges. So coming back to the Seek story, what did you and the management team do to tackle the various challenges that you were facing?
Yeah, I think for me to answer that question, I'd probably have to go back to kind of what was our frame of thinking. So with myself joining and then another exec joined, he was the chief product officer. We basically kind of had a conversation around trying to identify what is it that we want to do as an angle. And the angle was clear, right? Single unified organization, the right culture, one product, multiple brands, and ready to basically engage with Seek on a different level. Now, we knew where you wanted to be. The question was, how do we get there? So that's something that we actually worked on a little bit in the beginning. Rather than rush to do something, we just slowed down, take the time to kind of pause and sense. And that was something that I made sure I did, was resisted the urge to just start changing things. So I took about 3 months to really sense, talk to people, understand what's going on, and really to just exhibit a lot of empathy, because being acquired is a very traumatic experience for a lot of people, especially if they've been there a long time. You know, with the question of, am I still going to have a job? What's going to change? Are we just going to be expected to work a specific way? Will I have a say in it? So we really took the time in the first 3 months to really just talk to people, understand their context, understand their challenges. And then with this data and with this information, then I started to think about, how do we do this in a way that still takes care of people, but also gets us to where we need to go? And I think I just had this thought, right? Like, well, if we build products that we've never built before in an agile way using iteration, can't we just do the same thing with an organization? So that was the idea. Let's just build this using agile values and principles, right? So we started with that premise. We basically just huddled around a table with a blank sheet of paper and says, okay, what should this organization look like? Now, the CPO did give us some guidance, right? And again, we were using the frame of, if this was a product, if this organization was a product, what should it look like? So he gave us some principles, right? One, the organization should reflect our marketplace. So being a jobs marketplace, we basically only have two sides to the marketplace. We have the candidate side. So that's all the job seekers. On the other side of the market is all the hirers, employers looking to fill positions. And we're really just in the middle. So we basically start with that premise and say, okay, on one side, there's the candidate side. On the other side, there's the hirer side. All right, that's two sides of an organization. Then we kind of fill in a few more boxes like, okay, we got a data layer because data is our asset. We're investing in that and in AI intelligence. There's a small little box for our business systems to keep the things running. And then we have kind of a little box on the side that says, hey, we need to make sure that we invest in mobile because at that time we didn't have a really good mobile app. So we put a small little box and it says, okay, we got to build mobile. And when we looked at that, that became our organization, right? Now, the platform didn't reflect that, but we knew that in order for us to rebuild everything the right way, we have to build it based on what the business needs to look like. So that's what we did. So each box, we call it a domain. And then within each box, we basically just mapped out what is the customer journey that we need to take care of in each domain. So for example, on the candidate side, it's how does a candidate even find our portal? How does a candidate search for a job? How does a candidate apply for a job? How does a candidate get notified about what happens after the application? With each of those big parts of the journey, we basically just assign a team to it. Says, okay, this team, you're responsible for this part of the journey. This other team, you're responsible for this part of the journey. And we just kind of jotted down some KPIs around what good looks like and took a look at our technology portfolio and says, okay, this team, we're responsible for this part of the application. And that became our organizational blueprint. So with that blueprint in mind, the other thing we did was we wanted to solve problems that we saw within the organization. And one of the things I clearly saw was a lack of decision-making on a team level. So the company at this time was pretty slow compared to its competitors, right? It was releasing about once a month to production. Well, this is not counting bug fixes and support cases and the like. It was really about new value into production. Now, it may sound like one deployment a month is fast, but in our industry, it's really slow because Google is delivering
fast,
really, really fast.
Often.
So we had to improve our performance on that dimension by 1,000-fold.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just even for us to be relevant and stay relevant. So we kind of mapped out these kind of goals, right? Like how we have to get into production quickly. We have to respond to support cases faster and all these kind of engineering metrics.
Mm.
The big one for me, though, was engagement score. So I looked at our engagement scores and they were below 20%. So I took that metric as, okay, I'm going to own that metric.
Well, you say 20%, but actually 20% is quite good compared on a global basis. So it's not good on a company basis. But
that's
globally,
true, Andy.
That's actually higher than normal.
Well, I didn't know that at that time.
It's standard, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I looked at that. I'm like, no, that's not good enough. So the background for this is, you know, while we were planning, we were also hiring new leaders. And we just kind of listed down all the metrics that we needed to care about. And different leaders would take different metrics. So for me, I took on the engagement metric. I was like, okay, I'm going to own that. I'm going to raise that.
I really love how thoughtful you were in your approach. And you're looking at engagement. You're looking at all facets of the organization. And I kind of imagine having a blank canvas like that is equal parts scary and exciting. And I was just wondering, when you talk about the challenge, I know that you've kind of described some of these management decisions as taking either the blue or the red pill. There's that decision that's really easy in the moment, but will yield real pain later on. Or there's the one that's the hard choice, but ultimately the right choice. How did you go about making those kind of choices?
I think just putting myself back in the same position. I think I remember it was just over a round of beers and I just kind of said, we don't have any other choice. Because the right thing to do, the right thing to do is exactly what we set out to do, is we just got to rebuild this organization. And for me, the end goal was clear, is that we have to get one organization, one culture, and one that's ready to work with Seek. That was my target.
And not many people get to build something almost from the ground up in a way like that.
Yeah, and I think part of the challenge here, the metaphor that I had in my mind was we're on a bus. The bus is speeding down the highway, and yet we have to upgrade the bus at the same time.
Great analogy. Yeah. That's business these days, isn't it? Andy, I want to bring you in. Yeah. How do you think we go about making these sorts of choices?
The other interesting example I heard was Simon Muta, who was the CEO of Telecom, talking about their transformation, and he described it as being like having open heart surgery while you're running a marathon. So very similar. And I think that's the challenge for a lot of organizations, is that the business needs, the expectations are you can't stop. You've got to continue to make progress, to make profit. But at the same time, you've also got to make time to change. And that's a real paradox. I think the challenge for people when you're doing these is how do you not stop everything, but still give the people and the organization time to reflect and change.
So change isn't without its challenges. Can you tell us a little bit about the issues you faced along the way, T?
Definitely. I think part of what makes successful was two things. I think one was we were just incredibly naive. I was incredibly naive.
And that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Like, you know, there wasn't anything I didn't think we could do. Mm. So let's just go do it. The second thing was I was proud to be part of a leadership team where I felt we all had one thing in common, and that was a huge amount of care for people. And that's one of the things that we looked for. And I have to commend Daniel for that, because that's one of the things he looks for when he hires people into his team. And with that care, we were just responding to all sorts of kinds of issues as they popped up. And there were a lot of issues. But the principle for us was no issue is too small for any one of us to fix. So I'll give an example. So with the change, one of the things that I designed was a self-selection process. So it was called mission recruitment. And going back to the blueprint, where every team has a very clear objective, a clear mission, we basically just recruited people into it. And part of the recruitment was to instill the power of choice back to the individual. And the first thing they could do is to pick what team they're on. And that, for me, was to flatten the organization, to redistribute power back to the teams and individuals, because we want the decisions to be made quicker, right? Without going through this hierarchy or escalation, we trust the teams to make the choices that they do. But in order to empower a team, we also need to support them. And that's where the line of escalation became shorter. It was essentially a three-level organization. You got your team member, you got your manager, and you basically got me. So a lot of problems would come to me. Anything from, I don't get along in my team. I selected into this team, but I'm having conflicts with my team. So how do I solve that? We have teams who wasn't clear on what the mission was. Okay, I thought we signed up for this mission, but it doesn't seem like it's what I wanted. Okay, well, that's something else to solve. We had a lot of issues around legacy technology, where previously you have large functions taking care of this platform. Now, all of a sudden, you have teams which only takes care of very specific sections of the journey, but they go really deep. But we missed a few things. There were a few things that nobody covered. And when we had an issue, it wasn't clear who was responsible for it. So that was a big piece that we had to solve. And then even small things like we were rolling out MacBooks, and we were starting to give out MacBooks to people. And we even had people come up to me and says, how come this team gets MacBooks and I don't get a MacBook? Yeah, but that was our commitment. No problem is too small to fix, because I wanted to bring the engagement score up.
It does seem like a lot of transparency. And I'm just wondering, as you're talking, if there's such a huge focus on people, and how much of that do you attribute to the success of the team at Seek?
I would say a huge part. So the mental model I had in my mind of what success would start looking like for me personally is when team members starts owning the change.
Yeah, I love that element of self-selection. Pick your own adventure. Andy, what do you think about that?
So see, I was just thinking that when you were talking about when you started the job, that Daniel described your job as sort of like the scrum master of scrum masters. But then when I hear you talk about what you actually did, that actually does sound like a quite a accurate description. So have you reflected on that in a later date? I'm just sort of thinking about this, the whole mindset you took in, which was no issue is too small, and you saw your role as removing impediments.
I would say I went kind of full circle with the job. When I started, it was, oh yeah, I'm the Scrum Master of Scrum Masters, the head Scrum Master. And I looked at it and go, well, there are other things I got to do on top of that role, and that's designing what the new organization looks like, putting together processes, changing processes, upskilling my team, all these different things. And you know, as I evolved through that, my role kind of evolved with it. But by the end of this journey, my role was exactly what you said it was. It was being a Scrum Master. And I've even used that term with my peers and with execs. It's like, I feel like I'm just a Scrum Master for this team, making sure that we're facilitating ceremonies and identifying impediments, make sure that that gets handled really quickly, serving, like really serving my team. And I think that's a great parallel, that a lot of what I used to do on a team level to develop great product, I was doing the same thing developing a great organization.
Maybe the term is wrong. So maybe Scrum Master is not the right term, but because David was just talking about that perhaps there's a need for like Business Agility Master or some other title or word that sort of more describes more of a organizational context rather than the sort of narrow view of Scrum.
Yeah, I if you find what that's called, please let me know, because that's one of the things that I struggled with at Seek was what title's appropriate. And I never figured that out.
And it's also, do you need that kind of title? Like, I think it's interesting that there's kind of the formal role and the informal one, right? Like you were talking about your team being focused on who's got a Mac and who doesn't. When you're focused on, do I have a Mac and is there equality? You're not getting the work done. You're focused on these distractions. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the one thing that really hurt us was a lot of noise. And the issue with the noise was that it was largely a lot of things like hearsay. I heard someone say this or someone told me that. The feedback was very unstructured. And working in an environment with so much noise, it is very distracting, very destabilizing, and hugely demoralizing. So while all this was happening, our engagement was still pretty low. I mean, it was north of 20% at this point, but it was definitely less than 30%. So the challenge that we had was, I was looking at the situation and says, okay, we need more structured feedback because we can't make heads or tails of what's happening and we're just responding to things willy-nilly. So with one of my peers, I had this conversation around how do we actually know what our employees are saying and what's real and what's not. So very quickly, we invested in this tool called Office Vibe. And I've used it before in a previous engagement, really liked it. And basically championed with my peer the investment in this tool. So really briefly, Office Vibe is a continuous engagement tool. And one of the things that I had an issue with at Seek at that time was we did, if we were lucky and we had the budget at that time, we would do engagement survey every 6 months. Now, as an agilist, that feedback loop is way too long. I needed to get data quicker, faster. So I made the pitch. I said, we need Office Vibe because we're flying blind if we don't have data. So we did a trial with Office Vibe. And the original trial here was, we're going to just start small, maybe start with 20 people, see how the tool goes, and then we'll start scaling it up. I think either through a foolishness, I don't know what it was, I basically just sent an email out to my whole team saying, get everybody on this tool. Get everybody on this tool, all 200 people. And we got 80% of the organization on this tool, I think within probably a month. And of course, when my boss got the bill, he was a little surprised, but I had to kind of make the pitch. This is a good thing. We're getting more data now. See how many people are using this tool and give us all this valuable feedback. So,
yeah. Quality problem.
Yeah. So he was okay. He was okay with that. And the nice thing about Office Vibe was the way it works is it gives you a micro survey every week, and you're just basically filling out this micro survey in 30 seconds to a minute. and you're able to give anonymous feedback. Like, just type out what's happening, you get the feedback. So that part was immensely powerful, because all of a sudden it means that every single person in the organization is able to give feedback safely. And we as a leadership team, we made a commitment that we will respond to every piece of feedback within the week. Every single piece. Now, all of a sudden, we're getting feedback from people that didn't have a voice previously. We are getting feedback directly from the source. And we're able to see emerging themes of what the real challenges were. So with that, then I then introduce a backlog. I say, okay, here's the list. These are the things we picked out. Let's start putting stuff in the backlog and start prioritizing it. Right? Because if the organization is our product, we got to go fix our quality issues. And that's what we did. Right? Now, in the beginning, like, we had challenges, like everyone will pick up their stuff and they'll cherry pick the things they want to work on. And then we'll step on each other's toes. There was too many changes at the same time. We were starting to get feedback that, hey, the leaders are changing like 10 different things at a time. I'm so confused now. Sounds very similar to a team working on a product. So then we had to do the next logical thing. All right, let's put a WIP limit. All right, let's limit change to like 3 a month and just be really, really focused on those 3. Well, we kind of had to play around with the WIP limit a little bit. But the thing that I was really concerned about was change fatigue, right? Because people are getting tired of all these different changes. So how do we limit that, be more systematic, introduce change in a more sustainable way so that we don't burn out our people?
I really like how you've learned, for instance, with engagement, that you want to move it from a lagging to a leading indicator. I'm curious what else you learned from your experience at Seek that you'll take with you in the future.
I think the thing that I'm kind of retrospecting on and learning as I reflect on the engagement is, how do we add just enough structure so that we're disciplined with change? Given that we started with a blank sheet and it was really easy to be undisciplined about it. But at the same time, to still have that flexibility and that creativity and the space to adjust as we go along. And I think that was the constant tension that we had, was, you know, just enough structure, just enough creativity. And then playing between in those two spaces to really just learn as quickly as we can and then adapting as we needed to. And I think for me, if I were to look back and probably what I would have done differently, was we were overly focused on the technical side or the structural side or the process side. Right, these are the principles, this is our North Star, this is how we're going to do it. That's all great. What we learned, or I learned probably much later, was, what is the story that we're rewriting as an organization? And I remember having many debates with this, with my boss and my peers, is we're rewriting a story of two companies that had 20 years to accumulate. And then we're coming in at that point and we're rewriting the stories that was in the organization. So it was only within the last 6 months or so that I was there that we were really just telling new stories. You know, and part of the telling of the new story was really to look back and be proud of our achievements. Because we got a big bulk of this change done in about 18 months, where 18 months for me was the tipping point where I could start stepping back and people would solve their own problems. Like, that's when I knew that this was sustainable. Because up to that point, I was still really anxious that if I were to leave or anyone to leave, like, this thing was going to fall apart. And it was after this 18-month period that we started hearing stories from team-level people. They were telling stories about what we were doing, about the successes we were having, about how they would solve the challenges. And that was such a great moment.
How would you describe the ending of the story?
So by the time I left, I did a retrospective. I did a retrospective with Daniel and my manager and my peers. And we really just really looked at kind of how far we've come. So by the time I left, we were doing thousands of deployments a month. So we got that metric done. But we were starting, we've already started to harmonize our tech platform. So we had a single candidate platform, and we were then move on to work on the hire side. So we got quite a lot of engineering wins out of it. We were also in a position where we started growing the company as well. We were hiring more engineers and more people. And me, the number I'm proud of, engagement score was above 70%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Above 70%.
That blows the Gallup survey out the water.
Yeah. Certainly galloped ahead of most companies, right?
Yeah. Okay, so Andy, you know, these kind of change programs, they can really take their toll, and they're, as I said before, equal parts exciting, but you know, a lot of stress, a lot of learning. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, well, I think the classic story in this case was, from what I can tell and what I know of Z and Daniel, is getting the right people on the bus to start with is always a good start. And I think having the right mindset so with that team and that whole care of taking that as a central theme was, I think, a big factor. And so that's a really good place to start in all of this, is to take a bit of heart and care and consideration and really focus on the people side of things, and you'll go a long way.
I take from that you need some good drivers and some good mechanics so you can fix the bus on the fly. And that brings us to a close. I want to thank Z for joining us and sharing what I think is a pretty inspiring story. That was episode 24 of the Better Work Project. Thank you for joining us. If you liked this episode, don't be shy about showing it some love. We've got some exciting episodes coming up, so make sure you subscribe for more. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Better Work Project. If you like this episode, please be sure to rate, review, and tell your friends and colleagues about it. If you have specific suggestions or ideas for future podcasts, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Continue to fight the good fight. We'll see you the next time on the Better Work Project. Thank you.